Sermons from Broome Anglican Church in the Diocese of Northwest Australia. Sometimes you are faced with two bad options. Like when you are offered food on a regional flight. Sometimes elections feel like two bad options, don't they? You're not trying to figure out who will do the most good, you're just trying to figure out who will do the least damage. Today we're looking at a time when God's Old Testament people were faced with two bad options. Two kings who divided people from each other and from God. We can learn a lot from their mistakes, but the most important thing we can learn from them is how they helped set the stage for a good king who would reverse their mistakes. Now, this part of the Bible may be less familiar to us than other parts, so here's a bit of previously in the Bible. Around 1500 BC, Moses leads the people of Israel out of slavery in Egypt and eventually to the Promised Land, a land at the time called Canaan that God promised Abraham he would give to Abraham's descendants. After that, Joshua leads the conquest of that land, and the 12 tribes of Israel settle more or less in these areas. And at that time, their government is an ad hoc system of priests and judges. Eventually, the people decide they want a king. And the first king is Saul, who goes off the rails big time. Then God gives his people David, who is from Judah and who makes Jerusalem his capital. Now, at this point where we are today, it is around 1000 BC. The king after David is Solomon, and he makes the kingdom as big and as powerful and as wealthy as it ever gets. Sadly, Solomon goes off the rails too, mainly by worshipping foreign gods. That brings us to the chapter we just read, 1 Kings Chapter 12. Solomon has just died. His son Rehoboam is heir to the throne of Israel. And the question is, will Rehoboam be a good king or a bad king? We don't have to wait long to find out, because as we see in verse 1, all Israel gathers at Shechem, north of Jerusalem, to make Rehoboam king. But first, there is a bit of a labor dispute. That's because Solomon worked people too hard. We read in previous chapters that he drafted people into forced labor for his great building projects, and this was dangerously close to bringing them back to the kind of slavery they faced in Egypt. And so the people complain about this to Solomon's son. They say in verse 4, "Your father made our yoke heavy." And if you know your Gospels, that word yoke is ringing a bell. We'll come back to that later. But the people ask Rehoboam to make their yoke lighter. And they say to him that if he does, they'll serve him. These people are happy to have a king. They just want a king who will look after them. How does Rehoboam respond? Well, at first, he does two wise things. First thing, he asks for some time to think. I think that I got about 5% more wise when I realized I could do that in a difficult situation. Second wise thing he does, he takes counsel with the old men. Now, old people are not always wise. There is such a thing as old fools. But the Bible encourages us to have the habit of going to godly people with more experience than us for advice. And these old men give some good advice. Verse 7, if you will be a servant to these people today and speak good words to them when you answer them, then they will be your servants forever. They could have got that from one of many leadership books that you can go out and read today. There's one called Leaders Eat Last. And like many of these books, you can basically figure out the entire book from the title. That book is explaining that if you're a leader and you show people that you care about them, people will then follow you a long way. Unfortunately, Rehoboam doesn't take that advice. Instead, in verse 8, he asks the young men who grew up with him for their advice. Now, just as old people aren't always wise, young people aren't always unwise. But if you only seek advice from people who are like you, chances are they'll only tell you things you want to hear. That's what these young men do. They tell Rehoboam to say, verses 10, 11, my little finger is thicker than my father's thighs. And now, whereas my father laid on you a heavy yoke, I will add to your yoke. My father disciplined you with whips, but I will discipline you with scorpions. We think scorpions might mean whips with metal hooks or a cat of nine tails or something, basically a more serious whip. But more importantly, why did they give this advice? And why did Rehoboam take it? Has anybody heard of Machiavelli? Machiavelli was an Italian dude who was seriously into power. And one thing he said was, it is easier to control people with fear than with love. So maybe that's part of what these guys are thinking. But if we want to know the ultimate reason these things happened, it's given to us right here in verse 15. So the king did not listen to the people, for it was a turn of affairs brought about by the Lord that he might fulfill his word, which the Lord spoke to Ahijah the Shilonite, to Jeroboam the son of Nebat. You can read about that in the previous chapter. Ahijah said to Jeroboam, God's going to give you most of the kingdom. God's going to give you most of Solomon's kingdom. And then what we see in this chapter is that prophecy fulfilled. So this was a turn of affairs brought about by the Lord. This is something we see all the way through the Bible called the sovereignty of God. People make their choices and God achieves his purposes. We see this earlier in the Bible with Joseph. His brothers sold him into slavery, but God raised him up to sit at the Pharaoh's right hand. And from that position, he saved thousands of people from death. We see this with Jesus. His enemies crucified him, but God raised him up to sit at his own right hand. And from that position, he is saving many more people from eternal death. The sovereignty of God. We struggle to understand how the sovereignty of God works. I suspect you have to be God to understand that. But we can see that it works. Again and again and again in the Bible, people make their choices and God achieves his purposes. And for God's people, the sovereignty of God is a great comfort. We can't screw up God's plan. God's plan is like a great big wave that will get where it's going. The only question is, are we going to ride that wave or be wiped out by it? Let's turn from King Rehoboam to King Jeroboam. If you're wondering why their names are so similar, that's not actually very unusual to have names that have the same ending. Think in our own time of Samson, Harrison, Jackson. Now, Jeroboam isn't a king at the start of this chapter. He's actually a kind of a union leader. That's often a way into politics, isn't it? Jeroboam is the one who asks for better working conditions. And when Rehoboam says no, most of the people, at least 10 of the 12 tribes, pretty much say, forget you then, and they go away and make Jeroboam the new king of Israel. And here I'm going to show you one more map, because this is so important for understanding the Old Testament. From this point on, there are two kingdoms. The northern kingdom with 10 tribes keeps the name Israel. The southern kingdom with 2 tribes, Judah and Benjamin, will be called Judah. So Jeroboam is now the king of Israel. What sort of king will he be? He starts off okay. He builds 2 settlements, one right there at Shechem, another one at a place called Penuel. Both of those are kind of sacred sites for the people of Israel, so it might be that he builds settlements there as a way of securing his throne. Unfortunately, Jeroboam doesn't feel secure. Look at what he says to himself in verses 26 and 27. And Jeroboam said in his heart, "Now the kingdom will turn back to the house of David. If this people go up to offer sacrifices in the temple of the Lord at Jerusalem, then the heart of this people will turn again to their Lord, to Rehoboam, king of Judah, and they will kill me and return to him." Now there's kind of a logic there. If people have to keep going to Jerusalem, to Rehoboam's city, year after year to fulfill their religious responsibilities, then sooner or later they might just decide that Rehoboam is their rightful king after all. And hey, in anxious times, people love a leadership change, don't they? So there's a certain logic to Jeroboam's thinking, except that God had said, "I'm going to give most of the kingdom to you, Jeroboam." So what is Jeroboam doing at this point? He is doubting God's word. And that is always, always, always the point where things start to go wrong. I said at Easter that there is a good kind of doubt, or at least doubt can be good in the sense that it means we're using our brain. But there is a kind of doubt that's not good. When God gives people his word, but they don't believe him. And because Jeroboam doubts God's word, from that starting point, he does something terrible. In verses 28 and 29, he makes 2 calves of gold and puts them in 2 shrines as alternatives to God's temple. Man, he makes calves of gold. Doesn't he know how badly that went last time? If you're unfamiliar with this, let me fill you in. While Moses is up on Mount Sinai receiving the law of God directly from God himself, the people at the bottom of the mountain think he's taking too long, so they build a calf of gold as their god and start to worship it. And this is terrible. This is like committing adultery at your own wedding. It's such a disaster that God is this close to wiping out the people of Israel and starting again, except that Moses intercedes for them. And here's someone making not just 1 calf of gold, but 2 of them. And why calves anyway? Why does that seem to be the go-to idol for the people of Israel? We want to worship something, let's make it a cow. One idea is that other religions around this time had a calf or cow or bull as idols. And so this is a way of compromising with the surrounding culture. And this is something that God's people are always pressured to do. Compromise with the surrounding culture, accommodate to the surrounding culture. but it never actually works out. If you want to know what happens with churches that compromise with the surrounding culture, there are churches like that. You can go and attend their services and you'll probably double the congregation by turning up. And of course, Jeroboam is blatantly breaking the second commandment. No carved images, no idols, no worshipping statues. And do you know what's the point of that commandment? It's not just that, it's not that God has a problem with statues or something. The point of the commandment is this. The only one who gets to tell us what God is like is God. We don't get to create God. We don't get to modify God. We don't get to say, I like to think of God as X, Y, Z. The only one who gets to tell us what God is like is God. And our job is to believe and worship. And the only one who gets to tell us how to worship God is God. That's why it's such a disaster that Jeroboam not only makes these calves and makes his own shrines and makes his own priests and even makes his own festival. There are at least two fast food restaurants that have the slogan, have it your way. Anybody know which ones they are? I know this is a quiz. No? Good, that's because you all eat healthy food. You don't know anything about fast food restaurants. Subway and Burger King have the slogans, have it your way. We will make you whatever kind of burger or sandwich you like. And many people want religion to be like that. Let's just have it my way. But that is a very big mistake. It's a big mistake because even though sometimes we can't realize it, God's way is always better than our way. And Jeroboam having it his way has very tragic consequences. If you keep reading through 1 and 2 Kings, one thing that you'll notice is that just about every king gets a short, like one or two lined report card. It will say something like, Rehoboam did what was evil in the eyes of the Lord. Or it'll say, like with his grandson Asa, Asa did what was right in the eyes of the Lord. And this is a profound thing to notice. It's something that helps us realize that at the end of the day, of everything that we've done in our life, we are going to appear before the judgment seat of God, and we're either going to be on the right side or the wrong side. But also, something you'll notice is that every single king of Israel, the northern kingdom, gets a bad report card. Every single king of the north, it says, did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. And it tells us why. Because all of Jeroboam's successors, every king of Israel after him, walked in the sin of Jeroboam or clung to the sin of Jeroboam. They continued to use those idols. They continued to worship God their way instead of worshiping God, God's way. Many people around us, maybe even some of us here today, think what really matters is how nice you are. While who and how you worship matters much less. But if the God of the Bible is real, and if our eternal future depends on where we stand with him, then can you tell me anything that matters more than who and how we worship? Here's an illustration that helped me understand this. You are looking through a telescope. You see a sailor on a ship, and he looks like a really nice guy. He's working hard. He's getting along with all his shipmates. But then you tilt the telescope upward and you see the ship's flag. And it's a pirate flag. That changes things, doesn't it? And nice people who don't worship the Lord are just like that sailor. Even the nice things they do are serving a terrible cause. The cause that says, we don't need God. We don't judge those people. We just want them to get off that ship and get on board with Jesus. And if you haven't done that yet, I just want you to know that Jesus says to people who are not on board with him, come to me. He will have you. Welcome aboard. And in the midst of all the bad kings, in the midst of all the bad options, the good option is Jesus. And one way to understand Jesus is that he is the king who reversed the mistakes of Rehoboam and Jeroboam. Rehoboam divided people from each other. Jeroboam divided people from God. Jesus reversed both of those mistakes at the cross, where he paid the price for our sin against God, so that now people who believe in him are reunited with God and reunited with each other. So Jesus is the opposite of Rehoboam. Rehoboam said, my father made your yoke heavy, but I'm going to make it heavier. What did Jesus say in Matthew chapter 11? Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. At times I've had trouble with those verses because following Jesus is often not easy. And in other parts of the Bible, Jesus himself even says that. He tells people to count the cost. He tells people it's going to be hard to follow me. Make sure you know that before you start. But Jesus' yoke is easy in at least three ways. One, if you follow Jesus, if you believe Jesus is the Savior King sent by God, then you are no longer trying to be reconciled to God. You are reconciled to God. You have peace with God. When God looks at you, he doesn't see a problem to be solved. He sees one of his beloved children who will be with him forever. There's no better rest than that. Two, serving Jesus is easy even when it's hard. The Bible tells us we have the incredible power to rejoice in our sufferings. How on earth can we do that? Because we know about the sovereignty of God. When it seems like everything is wrong, we can rest because we know for sure, because Jesus rose from the dead, we can rest in the knowledge that he will make everything right one day. And three, if you follow Jesus, you are heading towards the rest of all rests, the holiday of all holidays, when you arrive in his kingdom, are welcomed with open arms, and you lay down all your burdens. So Jesus is the opposite of Rehoboam, and Jesus is the opposite of Jeroboam. Jeroboam led people away from true worship. Jesus leads us into true worship, worship in spirit and truth. Do you know how to worship God? Here it is in a nutshell. Follow Jesus. And Jeroboam gave people a false image of God. A cow, for goodness sake. Jesus gives us the true image of God. Jesus is the true image of God. That means we don't have to spend one second wondering what God is like. If we want to know exactly what God is like, we need only look to Jesus. In these books of 1 and 2 Kings, there are actually more than two bad options. Most of the kings, spoiler alert, most of the kings in these books are bad, and even the good ones have some very serious shortcomings. So these books help us appreciate our good king. They also help us remember that he is a king. And not just a king like King Charles, who I respect, but let's be honest, he's not in charge of my life. Here in the West, we've spent the last 1,000 years replacing kings with democracy. And a big reason to do that has been all the problems caused by bad kings over the years. But the ultimate answer to our problems is not democracy. The ultimate answer is a king, the good king, Jesus, the king who leads us into true worship, the king who says to everyone who comes to him, I will give you rest.
We hope that sermon helped you. To connect with us, visit our website, broomanglican.church.